Welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe discussion podcast. I am Cetra.
I'm Boom.
And we're here!
We're here! No one thought we were going to do this 2 weeks in a row, but we fucking did, man.
Victory.
Yay.
Temporary victory.
Except I totally accidentally brought up the wrong notes. It's not incursion. What is this, intervention?
Intervention.
So we're talking about episode one of season two, Intervention.
We made it to season two, everybody.
Yay. And what an extensive what happened last time reminder. It was like 5 minutes of things that you just were like, what? I haven't thought about that. Like Faith, like Kane's there.
Yeah. Very, very significant reminders of like.
Oh, by the way, the Nakai.
Yeah, by the way, the Nakai. By the way, all this stuff. Also, weirdly, like, the Hulu summary is like, return to destiny to find out what happens to the future. I'm like, that's really unhelpful, Hulu. Thanks for that reminder.
I mean, it's not wrong. It's just super vague. Oh, dear. Well, I can tell you I'm super sad that HD Blu-ray are not available anymore. I was like, oh, this used to look so pretty.
No kidding.
Aw, sad. So, oh yeah, and then the reminder thing also has to remind us that Young and Rush hate each other, which I thought was really strange because this is the best Young and Rush have ever worked together because they're not working together at all. Young gets sent off planet.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the reminder that Young tried to leave Rush for dead. It's got the reminder that Rey thought that was a bad idea. Like
the reminder that the Nakai got... And then, which is solely for the last scene with Chloe. Like, that's legit it.
Honestly, it's probably as much for the fact of like, ooh, look, it's a sci-fi show. There's aliens in this. Because that's the only aliens they've CG animated.
That's true.
At all.
That's true. Huh. So. It was just extensive is my point. I was just like, holy, does all of this enter into this episode? Because last time all I remember is it's Illusion Alliance and the SGU crew just like desperate to survive.
Yeah, very odd. Very odd. Especially to start because didn't we leave off on a pretty heavy cliffhanger, right? Like
we ended with Greer
possibly dying from radiation. You've got Chloe possibly dying of a gunshot wound.
And
you've got
Young
TJ having just been shot.
Right, and then the soldiers are all about to get killed, and Young is knowing it and kind of, like, looking up to God almost. And then it has this jarring beginning of TJ waking up in this nice room. And
so
she's
strange.
Freaking out that her baby is gone. And then, holy crap, Kane is back. And it's the same actor, but it looks different. He looks really different.
Well, and he looks very different. And a baby is like, it's obviously not a newborn baby. Like, this is a couple of weeks old baby.
Right. And
so you're like,
and in case you're wondering, that is not her actual baby that she had.
Well, clearly. Spoilers.
Spoiler alert. That's not her real baby. It's like somebody on the cruise baby. Yeah, I don't know. It was just, I don't know. It was weird. Like, I get why they did it because there's this thread of kind of like this afterlife with those all-seeing, all-powerful aliens, right? That comes back a couple episodes later.
Yeah. Well, and it recurs sort of throughout. I mean, because they discussed it a couple of times in the first season as well, right? With the obelisk planet and...
It almost makes me wonder if, you know, when Rush starts, like, hallucinating people, how much of that, because he does it within the computer, right? How much of that is actually controlled by that all-seeing, all-powerful alien race?
Yeah.
But that would suggest that they actually went into Destiny's systems and did shit.
Yeah, it's some sort... Is it some sort of echo of... I mean, is that the Ancients? Is that a power level that the Ancients reached?
Right.
Is this something else?
Or was it the power level the Ancients were trying to reach? So they are incidentally kind of reaching this half level of ascension? Or, like, what's going on? But it's just, all in all, just a weird opener. Especially after you have, like, Eli running slow-mo.
and
Chloe dying, essentially.
Very odd for them to review so much of, like, the kind of generic, we assume you never watched this show before.
Right.
Stuff without reviewing, here's where we were very specifically in all our cliffhangers.
Right. And now it's TJ, just chilling out, being cool.
Yeah, which, it kind of shows me how horribly mishandled this show was. That they didn't believe that anyone would be coming back, and they didn't believe that anyone watching this episode for the first time would be smart enough or care enough to be like, holy shit, a bunch of people were about to die, let me figure out what's happening.
I don't think that means it was horribly managed, because they start a lot of threads with this and remind people of a lot of threads that continue out throughout the series, and I think that's actually very clever handling of storylines. And it's not that unusual for series to do that. Like, you have to assume people are stupid. You really do a lot of the time. Well, and SGU doesn't jump in very often.
To jump into, like, the finishing of a serious cliffhanger situation without reminding you what any of the cliffhanger points were?
That is true. That is weird.
That seems... I mean, yeah, no, I'm not saying they shouldn't have had a general review of what the show was.
Right.
It's the fact that they didn't even mention very much of all the, like, cliffhanger stuff that was going on.
That's true. Well, anyways, once that TJ scene is over, then we're back to where we kind of expected to be. Which is Eli running to save Greer, and Brody getting a message from Eli that says they didn't make it. And Rush looks really sad. So I appreciate that little bit. Oh, by the way, this is going to be full of Brody feels for you. I have the most intense feels at the very end of this episode about Brody.
Yay, Brody feelings.
Brody feelings. And for people listening last episode... The actor's name is Peter Calamus, and I know I've said it a million times before, I just forgot it last episode. And yes, he was Goku on Dragon Ball Z.
Still amazing.
Yeah. But anyway, so we all think Scott and Greer are dead, but you and I are savvy sci-fi watchers. We're pretty sure they're not. And turns out they're not. Scott is on the radio.
Surprise.
And for the first time ever, he was smarter than Rush, because he went to the underside of the ship.
Yay.
I just feel like that's so weird that Rush didn't think about that.
Rush is not always about short-term physical space. He's good at a lot of things.
He doesn't know how long it takes to run in spacesuits to...
He had
other things on his mind. We'll give him a pass.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, as if we ever don't.
Right. So, and then Eli says my favorite line that I think just sums up what our podcast is, and I almost wish we named our podcast this. He goes, oh, just another day in outer space.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what we were trying to say with Charlie Foxtrot, like, every episode is a fucking clusterfuck.
Yeah.
And Eli says it even more beautifully. He's just like, nope, just another day on Destiny, where everything sucks. Like, this is not out of the normal at all.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Well, especially for, like, Eli's particular life, crew's particular life, it just, get to a point where your universe's average, like, shitty day-o-meter is pretty far off.
Yeah. So, next, Danik is trying to kill everybody. Varro is trying to stop it. And Young realizes that TJ has been shot and the baby's probably dead, so he loses all...
His freaking mind.
I don't get it. I mean, I've never been a parent, so I don't get it. But this is a baby that he didn't plan on, and that she's been very insistent that he has nothing to do with.
Yeah.
But he's like, nope, TJ feelings.
And, well, isn't that just the definition of everything Young's life has been, right?
Like,
nope, I have decided that I get this right over you because we slept together a few times, even though you say you're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
I have decided that I get to keep you in my team, even though you're trying to quit. Mm-hmm. I've decided that you get to keep this baby and I'm going to help, even though you told me to fuck off.
Right.
Like,
it's very Young. I can see why he got divorced.
Yeah, he's a man in charge.
Yeah.
So
he loses his shit, which is not a great idea for the crew, because it just gives Danik an excuse to kill everybody.
Yeah.
So then next they use communication stones to bring people in to save Kiva and TJ.
Yeah, which is cool, except that it means the Lucian Alliance knowing how to use the communication stones, but...
Well, I mean, they do lampshade it. They say, like, there's no way for them to get an advantage over this, right? Because, like, the communication stones are legit for communication. Like, SGC can't do anything from that far away, even if they use those stones. And, I mean, they could try and mess with the ship, but, like, the Lucian Alliance is going to be on them pretty hard. There's no... I can't see an opportunity for them to do that. And they can just kill the people whose bodies they're inhabiting.
It's true. At the same time, like, for them to go, oh, there's nothing that people on Earth can do about this, is one thing.
They could just not save Kiva.
Well, there's that.
Right.
It's also, like, the communication stones were half responsible for this whole fuckery that they're in right now, right? Because the Lucian Alliance getting a hold of Rush and being able to keep him...
Oh, that's true.
...was why they were even able to dial Destiny in the first place. So to say, like, oh, we can just bring people's brains in, but it doesn't affect things...
Right, I guess...
...is a little...
Short-sighted.
...disingenuous.
Yeah, I get that. All right. Well, anyway. Next scene, it's Eli letting in Scott and Greer, and I like how Scott is like, we're fine, and Greer goes, no we're not. And then, speaking of all the fineness, Chloe, who last episode was passing out, is like, not shot at all. She's fine.
Yeah, well, so maybe that's why they didn't remind us of...
Of, like, her near-death.
...freaking issues, yeah.
I feel like they...
Chloe is fine.
I think they realized what they were going to do with her after the season finale. And I also think they didn't know how to solve her situation. So they kind of just
were
like,
what's implied in this, like, retconning fixing of it?
Yeah.
That somehow her genetics have shifted enough that she can now heal more, but only after appearing to bleed out and lose consciousness?
Yeah, that's where I get caught up, right? It's like she... bled out, lost consciousness, and then her genetics kicked in, her altered genetics. Also, why doesn't Rush have altered genetics like she does? He was there longer.
You ask such good questions. The general assumption, which I believe is never addressed, is that Rush had some way to resist them mentally, and because they couldn't get everything from him as a human thinking person, they didn't want to change him yet because part of their goal was to study and understand humans. Chloe, they got everything that she was real fast and then were like, well, bored now, let's make you better.
Or let's change you so we have a better interim communication person.
Exactly.
Or they were using her as a mole. Well, they used Rush as a mole as well. They put like the tracking device on him. But maybe they're trying to use her as something to trigger. And they do kind of touch on that later on in the series, right? Mm-hmm. And that she's really worried that she's going to change so much that she won't be on Destiny's side anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think they knew long-term what they wanted to do with Chloe after Incursion Part 2. And they're like, well, how can we hint at this earlier than... actually doing it and blindsiding people like Dr. Bashir on DS9, who suddenly season 5 has altered genetics.
I mean, outside of kayfabe, right? Like, we don't know when they found out they were getting a second season.
No, they knew before they were when they were doing commentaries, they knew that they were
That's true.
They had a second season, but I don't think they knew too much before those episodes were filming. Or maybe this was their plan all along, and I'm not going to critique it. I just think it's... I feel like it's disingenuous to do the Chloe's dying thing and then have her just, without any climax at all, have her just be like,
hi! Yeah,
just
be fine.
Yeah, like, that was weird to me.
It's jarring. Yeah. And it's... Yeah.
But I get why they did it, because the TJ and the Chloe plotline are huge in the second season, and you have to hint at it earlier than later.
Yeah. And it does, I mean, it leaves those of us that were watching it with this huge question of like, wait a minute, is this just bad writing? Like, how the hell is Chloe okay?
Right.
And it turns out, well, it's not entirely.
Right. It's not bad writing if they weren't sure what the season 2 overall plot was.
Yeah.
And also they had
an episode where we're seeing, you know, not quite hallucinations, but things that aren't true.
Right.
In relation to people who are nearly dying, like, it gives this this extra angle of surrealness to anything that Chloe's in as well,
right.
even though it's not filmed in soft light in a cabin.
Right.
Of like, yeah, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, maybe it's the surreality that makes it so jarring. You're right. But by the way, the TJ thing? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, because we jump from, you know, Matt and Greer getting inside and meeting Eli and Chloe to the doctors basically saying, we've done what we can for TJ, but we don't know yet.
Right.
And then into more TJ hallucination. And you're like, oh, okay, TJ's not okay. She's
right.
in her head.
Well, I mean, the whole TJ plotline, honestly, that was, they had to scramble for that because it was never intended for TJ to be pregnant. They didn't know that until, like, halfway through the season when Elena Huffman was like, by the way, guys,
sorry baby.
Like, Kane was legit supposed to be her love interest, and that was supposed to go somewhere else, which is why he gets so much screen time at the end of Faith. And then she's like, sorry, pregnant. And so that changed a lot of how the rest of the episodes were written. And I think it also directly affected this episode because they had to figure out a way how to get rid of the baby. Then they sort of try and connected that to the Kane storyline with the sort of ascension, not ascension part. And
yeah.
I don't think they're bad writers at all. I think they were kind of dealt a difficult hand to try and write around.
Yeah, the only reason I mentioned bad writing was the Chloe disconnect plot hole.
Right, that's a good point.
Like, nothing else about these characters is badly connected or badly presented.
Yeah.
And it is, I think it, as much as, like, we know from an outside angle that it was a kind of scramble to cover this, it
right.
is a very interesting angle to take near death and childbirth and loss of a child and, like,
right.
tie it all into this weird future faith. Because what TJ ends up having is faith in God, right?
Right.
My baby went to heaven. My baby's in a better place.
Right. Faith in something.
Which,
I'm not
yeah.
sure if it's God, but it's faith in something beyond
yeah.
what she knows and
it's
sees.
It's very similar. You know, if it was
yeah.
America 200 years ago instead of America 200 years from now.
Yeah.
Or currently, I guess.
Well,
Stargate
currently.
Is always supposed to be current. But, like, that's what it would be. That would be what people assume.
Yeah.
And because it's filtered through this science fiction aspect, it gives us some interesting interpretations of, like,
right.
What do we really want to believe in when we're choosing to believe in something? How present or not present or tangible does it need to be in our lives in order for it to be valuable to us?
Right. Well, you know, and she's actually been proven... Like, whatever she saw was real. And we know it's real because she saw
yeah.
that... Kane shows her that nebula in her hallucinations. And there's no way she saw that ever at any point before that. And then when she gets out of the hospital bed at the very end of the episode, which we will talk about,
yeah.
she sees that exact same nebula. So, like, we know that that experience was real. I forgot where I was going with that. But it's interesting. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, TJ has more tangible proof of her faith
right.
than a lot of people
She's
get.
Not blindly believing.
No.
I guess is my point.
But it does still... She gets treated a little bit like it is blind faith.
Yeah, because no one else saw that. So anyways, back in the med bay, Varro is nicely threatening the doctors from the SGC, being like, you know, if Kiva dies, you guys are going to have a lot of problems. A lot
yeah.
of problems, because apparently Danik is way worse than Kiva is.
Yeah.
And then he's sad about the fact that TJ's baby has been taken out, and there is zero guarantee that either will survive.
Yeah.
Yay,
look, someone from the Lucian Alliance has emotions.
Well, a lot of them do. In this
yeah.
episode, like, I thought it was weird that, I mean, obviously they didn't know what was happening for the second season and all that, but there's, like, suddenly all these characters from the Lucian Alliance that I felt like they should have highlighted a little more in the last episode.
Yeah.
Like, Gin, they don't even give Gin a name in this episode at all. She's just there and highlighted
and,
a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, by halfway through the season, she's, like, super important.
Yeah! And then, is it what is his name? The one that causes all the problems for everybody later on, because he doesn't trust Varro and he wants to take over the ship. Like,
oh,
the Greer
shoot.
Of the LA.
Yeah.
He.
That's a great Lucian Alliance Greer.
Yeah. I'm going to call him L.A. Greer. So, like, they added all these characters in, which was awesome, but then they get rid of them so quickly, and they weren't there for the original Lucian Alliance incursion. It's just, I know why it happened. Like, outside of canon, I understand why they did what they did, and they were just making the best that they could do with what they could do, but it's frustrating from a storyline perspective.
Yeah, it is. There are some shows where they film all the way through a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, so that there is continuity, and this clearly is not one of them.
Nope. Nope, 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 nope. But, fun fact, they do film, like, 4 episodes at a time. So they'll be working on 4 different episodes in a week. So that's interesting.
Oh, wow.
That's what I learned on the commentary yesterday.
Interesting. I wonder if that's a part of why we see some lines tie through so strongly from episode to episode in terms of character performance, and others get lost.
Well, they did say in the commentary that they'll often, like, retcon in those weeks to add, like, change a character to have more lines, or give lines from, like, a nobody character to a different character so they have a stronger line. So that makes sense to me.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyways.
Ways in which real TV is, like, wrestling a little bit.
Yep, a little bit.
Anyway, they have an alien.
Well, sorry, TJ is in her mind world, and Kane tells her that the aliens are interested in her and her baby, but okay. Then Varro gets a report from Gin, who we still don't know the name of. I just happen to know her name. And the countdown clock is on to FDL.
Yeah, which is not great.
Right. Which is also not great is the fact that Kiva just died, and I feel like it's such a weak ending for her. But at the same time, it feels fitting because it's so surprising.
Yeah, it does the classic Joss Whedon thing of, like, making you believe that anyone could die.
Right. I wonder if they could, like, get the actress back.
That could easily be the case. You know,
she's
especially,
like, a supermodel.
Well, and especially knowing if they did want her to die shortly, mentioning how many people died, or it could easily be that she's like, no, I'm not coming back to, like, waste a week of my life filming 10 minutes of stuff for you, sorry.
Right. I mean, I feel like easily Danik's lines are Kiva's lines. Easily.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But maybe what they didn't have time for, because they had to add in the Chloe stuff and the TJ stuff, maybe they didn't have time for Telford and Kiva to have their come to Jesus, because she would have known if she woke up. Like, I think this is, like, their way of being like, okay, Kiva found out, they shot each other, Telford's cover's still intact.
Well, that's true, and it's also another way of, like, everything Telford says goes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's the only one that was there, he can say whatever he wants about it, and everybody has to believe him.
Yeah.
Or doesn't have to. In the case of...
I can't remember his name.
What's his name? Danik?
No, Simeon. It's guy. Simeon. Simeon's the one that's talking to him. I tried to call him Seaman earlier, which is bad. So anyways, Eli finds Brody and Rush. And I love that Rush stands back and Brody goes to check out the door. And they both look really scared. It also makes sense to me that Brody goes to check the door to see if it's Eli. Because they both know... That
Rush is more valuable.
That Rush is more valuable, and the Lucian Alliance will probably shoot first.
And here's the thing is, Brody goes to the door, but Rush still steps out from behind his console. Like, he's still ready.
Right.
He's not ignoring this.
Right. Then it's Eli, and Brody's happy, and Rush looks just so fucking relieved. And then he's immediately back to work.
Yeah. He looks relieved in a Rush way, which is to say, I am allowing myself 35 seconds of sentiment.
Right.
And now it is time.
It's not even that long.
Again.
It's 5 seconds of sentiment, then back to work. And Brody, and this is where I'm going to start with my Brody feeling speech. He starts being almost proud of Rush's crazy plan, which they don't tell the audience right now, but Rush's plan of basically pulling a Kiva and brinksmanshipping them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, bluffing. Well, I don't think Rush is actually bluffing, but you know what I mean? To use the pulsar to blackmail them, essentially. That's why he doesn't want to go to FTL.
Brody is so... Like, once again, we see, like, that he's 100% on Rush's side. Here they were alone in the darkness.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if Park was there, there would be lights on. If
Right.
Volker was there, there would be, like, more light. It wouldn't be
There'd
so
be some
cold that
food.
their breath is frosting against the window.
Right.
Like, no,
Now.
Brody's like, I'm here to do the part of the work that Rush can't do because he's only one man.
Right. Now keep
His
that
plan.
keep this thought in mind for when we get to the end of the episode, because I think this is what where truly Brody starts to turn and makes the choice to go back to Earth. And I have a whole long speech about it.
Ooh,
But right
exciting.
now he's behind Rush 100%. But I don't think in the end he feels that way at all. So, Danik and Varro argue. Varro is like, rampaging, super bad idea. Gin kind of interrupts their argument a little bit to tell them that they can send the SG crew to, sorry, the Destiny crew to this planet that is sort of survivable.
Yeah, like it's vaguely M-class.
It's, yeah. Way to
You
go,
could
Star
breathe
Trek
on it.
reference. Yeah, and that's fine. Danik doesn't give a shit. He just wants to send them. Go. Back to Kane and TJ. Two people come in to see the baby in a kind of creepy way. But I like when she's like, "How are you?" And they answer, "Oh, we're good. We're surviving." And I was like, the irony of that statement, because we all know they're dead. Well, we don't know. If we'd only seen
Yeah.
this episode, we don't know that they're dead. But you and I've seen season two. They're fucking dead.
Yeah,
They died a
real
long
dead.
time ago.
Vero does this interesting thing in the end of their argument, sorry to backtrack slightly,
That's okay.
which is that kind of in realizing that everybody else is nuts, as they're basically talking about killing everyone from Earth on the ship, he's
Right.
just kind of offhand like, well, not the doctors, because they're still working on our people,
Yeah.
and not Lieutenant Johansson because she's a doctor. Like,
Yeah.
he does it in this very casual, like, offhand way of
He's
like, well, obviously.
right. He's
And
kind of like a Telford a bit.
what he's trying to do is save people, but he knows that, like,
Right.
no normal moral argument would work with these crazy people.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me.
Yeah.
We're skipping, like, Matt and Greer wander through the ship in the darkness sections, but they're not really doing anything, just being sneaky and attractive, so
Right, that's why I skipped it.
seems
But
fair.
it'll be important later. So yes, Matt and Greer are retconning a little, not retconning. What do you call it when you're reconnaissancing?
Recon, yeah.
Recon.
Very close.
So close. They're reconning, and also trying to find Rush and Eli and all that, because remember they split up with Eli and told him and
Yeah.
Chloe to go straight to Rush and that they're gonna do some recon. Blah blah blah, TJ. Now, here's the scene that I think is really, really interesting that leads to absolutely nowhere. And that's Telford waking up to Simeon. And Simeon kind of hinting very strongly to Telford that he's pretty sure Telford is the mole because they were both shot and Telford wasn't shot from behind.
Yeah. It gives Telford someone to struggle against for this new season, right? Like,
But they
this
don't.
person. Yeah, but they sort of let it go.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like I don't know why the scene was added in, because by the end of this episode, it's clear what side Telford is on, and like the Lucian Alliance are basically the prisoners, so it doesn't fucking matter that he needs to keep his cover, right?
Yeah.
And then he
It's
doesn't
I
really
mean
have any scenes with Simeon. Like, Simeon's tensions were all with Rush later on, and Varro.
Which is so strange.
Yeah.
Like, it is a good excuse to show Lou Diamond Phillips mostly shirtless, which is fine.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But other than that, like, it is odd. It is. There's so many good opportunities here to show how persuasive Telford can be, right? That he turned
Right.
this suspicious person back toward him or against him, or. But no, they just drop it.
Right, and then Simeon
It's a
leaves
good
with a.
chunk of acting, and then it's gone.
I mean, it was good, but then Simeon leaves with like this vague threat about Young and the crew.
Yeah.
Anyways, Varro talks to Young and is like, "Yeah, bye, you're going to the planet." And then he totally reads what Young wants to do. You know, he's like, "Don't jump me, because like you do that and you'll die, and you need to stay alive for your crew, so don't be a fucking moron." And Young kind
Oh,
of
you
gives
mean
him.
finally someone says to Young what someone's needed to say to Young since episode one of season one?
I mean, I like that they start setting up this sort of
very similar antagonism between Young and Varro, and it gets dirtied by the fact that TJ likes Varro. And so then the antagonism is solely Young having TJ feels.
Yeah.
And that annoys me. It's but originally, it really felt like a Rush-Young relationship.
And it's very different in this sense that Varro is coming from a command and leadership perspective, not a science perspective like Rush
right,
is.
Right.
And Young should respect him. He right. is right about this.
Right.
Right? He's saying, as a leader, you can't just bail right now.
Right.
Like, yeah, it would be nice for you to go out in a blaze of glory and not have to deal with this anymore, but get over it.
Oh my god, that's so... I love how you said that, because I'm like, isn't that just so typically Young? It's always he wants to go out in a blaze of glory and not deal with the consequences.
I'm not kidding when I say, like, since episode one of season one.
He's like,
Matt
suicidal.
Hasn't been able to say this to him.
Right.
Because Matt is his subordinate. And right. here's finally someone at a similar level of authority in an right. alternate organization saying, I know what you're thinking, because it's what I'd be thinking too.
Right.
And it's a stupid idea. Yeah. And it's Varro proving that he's a good person who
right.
cares about the good of living beings. I won't say humanity because I know the Lucian Alliance don't count themselves as human, quote unquote.
They do. I think they count themselves as the real humans.
Okay.
Because the Terrans didn't have, sorry, the Tauri didn't have to actually deal with, you know, the
also their shit.
The Goa'uld ruled for centuries and centuries and centuries.
Yeah.
Right? So they're saying they have a different culture.
So it's like how all the new religions in Japan think they're the real Buddhists?
I don't know anything about that, but you do, so I'll let you say yes.
Oh. Anyway, so it's this interesting moment of telling us so much about who Varro is
and
who
they
Young
drop
is.
The relationship.
And then, like you said, they drop it and they make it about a girl, which is
so stupid.
It's the same thing, oddly, that happens to so many female relationships in shows, right?
Yeah.
Like, here's these two women, they have jobs, they do cool things, they have a friendship or a relationship,
and then
or
they're fighting
an antagonism,
over a guy.
And then a pretty boy walks by, and then it's over,
right?
it's
makes me sad.
It's lessening to Young's character. It's lessening to Varro's character.
It's lessening to TJ's the most.
It doesn't freaking benefit anybody.
I mean, it just makes me long a little bit for Force Over Distance, where that ends pretty quick. Like, there's once Young is inside the brain of Brush, like all his problems are in that direction.
Yeah,
and he doesn't give a shit
once. Once the Young Rush conglomerate has to function as a single entity or die, it definitely changes things a little.
Yeah. So what I love about Young in the next scene is, you know, Varro sends him through the gate, and he just gives this long, lingering "fuck you" look before he goes through the Stargate.
Yeah.
And I assume the planet they go to is pretty cold, because the first thing Young does is put on a hat.
And the whole time he's talking to Riley, Riley is, like, rubbing his hands together, like, I'm freezing,
yeah.
I'm freezing.
They're so good. I don't know if it was really cold that day or not, but it was awesome.
They definitely told everyone, like, where you are is cold, like, huddle, pull your jackets on.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of background people whose names we don't even know, like, tugging right. on jackets, leaning into each other, you know, looking at this planet that will obviously be their doom.
Right. It was, and then the storm comes in, and everything sucks for them.
Just another day in space.
Just another day in space. Back to Eli being worried about Greer and Scott, and then someone comes to the door, and you think, oh, it's Greer and Scott. But no, it's the Lucian Alliance!
Da-na-na.
Da-na-na. Oh, no, wait, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, because they don't know it's the Lucian Alliance, totally. No, they do at the very end of that scene, and then it goes... cuts back to Danik and Gin and Varro talking about the shield, and then they're able to hear over the radio what's going on, right?
Yeah.
And then Rush stands in front of everybody and is like, he moves to start standing in front. I mean, like, you don't want to kill anyone, because the orders are kill everyone but Rush. And I don't know what his plan was going to be, but who cares, because Scott and Greer saved the day.
Yay! Sometimes the military does smart things.
Yay! Well, I mean, they kind of hinted that they were following them.
It does seem weird. Okay, no, I'm going to take it back. Sorry, I was going to have this moment where I'm like, it seems weird that the Lucian Alliance couldn't just, like, scan the ship and realize that there's other life signs outside of what they have control of. And then I'm like, of course they can't. Rush has control of all the systems.
Right. Well, he controls some of the systems.
And he's the only one who's ever known how to make this ship work anyway.
Right. They have a very rudimentary knowledge of it. See, to me, I was a little like, oh, that's serendipitous that Greer and Scott come in to save the day. And then I realized, no, they'd hinted that they were following this group of people on purpose
for a bit. Yeah, they needed to figure out where the Lucian Alliance was operating from. And...
Right. So it wasn't that serendipitous. It was exactly what should have happened. Rush is badass, takes the radio, is like, we couldn't carry out your orders, so let me tell you how fucked you are, and we're gonna die. We're all gonna die if you don't.
Yay.
Because I think Rush is willing to die. I think he is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, okay, we've discussed this before. Right. All that Rush has is destiny.
Right.
This is the be-all, end-all of the rest of his life.
Right.
And I mean, so, of course...
And if it's like, not, then he was bad to Gloria for no reason at all. So, like, he exactly. needs to make it happen.
Yeah. So his... I think he is completely willing to die if the alternatives are lose control of destiny.
I think, though, it's interesting, and we'll see this at the end of the episode, I don't think he's actually as okay as he thinks he is about other people dying for it as well.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
We'll talk about that at the very end.
Yeah. It's standard Rush, right? Like, he can calculate and know analytically
what the right answer
X,
is.
XYZ, yeah, is worth the risk, is worth the casualties. That doesn't change the fact that when it's someone close to him or someone whose name he knows,
right.
That's still, less okay.
Yeah, but he'll still do it. So, in any case, Eli is watching Danik, right? No, I think I skipped ahead in my notes. Let me go back.
When we get this whole group of Lucian Alliance people sent back through the gate to, like, confront Young, right? Varro and his people?
All right. Well, not confront Young. They get sent through because Varro confronted Danik. And Danik was like, get the fuck off my ship. And then Varro's like, dude, why don't be mean to me. Like, all I've done is save your ass over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So.
So, I guess let's kick out the good, which is how you know that Danik is not a good leader. Like, right. they're, as if it wasn't super obvious, right? Like, they're telegraphing it in other ways as well. Like, he doesn't appreciate the value of his own people. He's paranoid and he doesn't understand what loyalty is and doesn't believe that people are loyal to him even when they are.
Right. Danik sucks. I skipped over. Oh yeah, and Gin obviously objects while they're fighting before Varro gets into the planet. Rush realizes that everyone is off the ship, and he says that that's better for everyone in general. And then Scott throws a wrench into all their plans about hydroponics and all that because TJ and the doctors are still with the Lucian Alliance. I think it's really telling that Rush says absolutely nothing here because he is so unsure about what to do. So Scott, interestingly here, Scott makes the decision. He goes, you get to the hydroponics and then you wait 15 minutes and then you seal the door no matter what. Rush doesn't say that. Rush is pretty conflicted, I think.
Well, and to read this another way, like, yes, there's some uncertainty and some conflict in Rush. Rush also is now in this situation where, let's assume that what we have is all we get to work with, right? Let's assume they just killed everyone else when they sent them through the gate. Mm-hmm. Scott is now his commanding officer that he's going to have to work with after he saves everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if he's thinking ahead.
I think letting Scott take some leadership so that he knows how Scott will react and Scott feels like he's in charge is the right thing to do here on a variety of political levels as well.
Right. I don't know if he was thinking that far ahead, though. Like, I think, yes, you're right. And normally I would attribute that to Rush. But I think in this case, I think he's not as sure about his plan as he's pretending to be, number one. Number two, I don't think he actually wants to physically send someone to their death. So he is actually letting Scott do it for him.
That all seems accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he also doesn't want TJ to die. A, for rational reasons, that's their medic. And B, he genuinely likes TJ. So, which they've shown several times in the last season.
Except for she got mad at him when he did the coup. And that relationship got properly screwed. But anyways, he still likes her.
Yeah, he still likes her. He still respects her because she's competent at her job. And
right. So anyways, then Varro gets sent to the planet. And then Camille was one of the people that they used to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And she just looks haggard.
Oh, she looks horrible and horrified, but she's alive.
Well, I mean, she looks like she's trying to take care of people when she's not a doctor anymore, and she's even stressed out because of that. Like, suddenly she's in the med bay with all these dying people. Like, alone. What is she supposed to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nearly get shot and then get saved by Greer and Scott is what she's supposed to do.
Yeah. And then they ask, like, what happened to the baby. Camille kind of answers without answering, and she just looks fucking broken. She looks absolutely broken.
Yeah.
I think she was actually pretty excited about this kid.
Well, I think it was an angle of hope, right?
Right.
It was an angle of proof that there is life that can be ongoing even out here.
Yeah.
And instead it was further proof that shit's fucked.
Shit's fucked. Yeah. So in TJ World, they go see the supernova, and Kane, not the supernova, the nebula.
Nebula thing, yeah.
Nebula thing. And Kane tells TJ she made her choice. She can't have what they have, but her daughter can. And she obviously is like, what the fuck? So, the next scene, Brody is welding the door, and we're going to start feeling a little bit more of my Brody feels. Brody is welding the door just in case Danik decides to vent atmosphere, because the plants should give them enough atmosphere to survive until they can reestablish systems. And Rush closes the last door because it's been 15 minutes. And Eli's like, come on, we have time. Like, just let's wait a couple more minutes. And Rush is like, no, we have to do it. And Brody obviously agrees, but he doesn't really want to do it. But he thinks Rush is right. So he kind of like reluctantly goes over without saying anything.
Yeah.
And they sealed the door. And here's what I really love. Remember last time Rush sent somebody that Chloe loved to his death, essentially?
Yeah.
She was fucking punching him and killing him, right? Like, she was so angry. Like, how dare he do this? How dare he play with people's lives? He's doing essentially the same thing with Scott. Like, Scott and her father both made the decision, right? They both made the decision to do what they do. And this is such a turnabout in her relationship with Rush. Especially since the Nakai incident, right? Like, she doesn't want Scott to die. It's obvious in her eyes, but she's not saying anything because she knows he's right. So you have three people who are doing something they don't want to do, but they know it's right, and Eli's bitching about it. Because Eli's fucking stupid.
Well, yeah, it's showing that Chloe has grown as a person. Right?
Right.
Chloe has experienced loss and nearly died and fought through and come to an understanding that these sacrifices are sometimes necessary.
Right.
Where Eli is still living in frickin' Star Trek land.
Right. Absolutely agree.
Where everybody can be saved at the last minute and is not willing to accept that loss. And it's meant maybe to make us like Eli more.
But it makes me mad at him.
Yeah, it doesn't do that for me.
He has three people who obviously feel guilty, who don't want to do what they're doing, but they know rationally this is the right decision, knowing what they know.
Yeah, and it's this very real way to show that Eli still has no sense of the room, right? Even if you were just existing in that space and realizing, like, okay, everyone's really unhappy, but they're carrying on, you wouldn't be throwing it all back in their faces, like, no, we can't do this.
Exactly. Like, hey, by the way, that's not what your friend wants to hear right now. She wants she wants it to be quiet. So, back on the planet, Young checks in on Varro. He's pretty snarky about the planet because Varro's like, hey, how long is this storm going to last? And Young's like, I don't know, you pick the planet.
Gee, that would be cool if you'd sent any of our scientists with us or any technology or studied the planet first.
You legit just sent us with our clothes on our back and we're screwed. Then James gets stunned by some lightning. Poor James.
And now he cares about her, because to him, he's lost all his other commanding officers, so now he has to just deal with James as his only lieutenant.
Yeah.
And that pisses Vanessa me off James. A little bit.
Lieutenant 4 of 4.
It literally took her getting shocked by lightning for him to be nice to her in any way.
Yeah.
And she's not a bad lieutenant. She's just been in shitty situations. And got mind-fucked.
And she has the disadvantage of being a woman on Young's crew, and he obviously has some issues.
Yeah.
Like,
who's the... What's another woman soldier we can think of? Barnes? I can only think of Barnes.
Yeah. That's it. Barnes and TJ.
Oh, that's right, TJ. Yeah, but TJ, to me, is still always a medic, even though she's definitely in the hierarchy.
Well, and being a woman under Young's command has obviously not been great for her... career-wise, either.
Good point. So, now Eli is watching the Lucian Alliance with the Kinos. They didn't use the Kinos very much during this, like, four-part Lucian Alliance storyline, I realize.
Yeah, which is odd.
It's like they must have forgotten about them.
Or it was just, I don't know. Like, I know they used them for these, like, kind of backstage outtakes videos in the first season.
Right.
And there may have been negative fan reaction or people thinking they were too cliched or something like that. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think the Kinos give a real more human look into what they're doing.
Yeah. And they're this tool that is kind of specialized to Eli.
Right.
Like, that's like him and Riley are really the ones that know how to use them, so.
Riley not for very much longer. Wah, wah. So basically the Legion Alliance figures out where Rush is and they want to blow the door down, and Telford is like, bad idea, because we need Rush. Rush is the only person who can do anything. Rush starts his negotiation. Danik thinks he's bluffing.
Rush doesn't bluff, but Danik is too stupid to know that.
That's not true. Rush actually bluffs. Remember when Telford's crew tried to take over the ship?
I know.
Earth? Was it Earth? Yeah, it was Earth. And he, like, basically blew up the ship. Or made him think it was going to blow up.
I'm kidding. Rush bluffs all the time, but he also is willing to freaking murder people when necessary.
Right. So. In this case, I don't think he's bluffing, but I also think he wishes he wasn't. I think he wishes he was bluffing.
Seems accurate.
So, you know, they argue with Rush. You know, they still have people out there. No, sorry. Danik tells him there's still people out there. Rush, I love this pause he says. Like, he has this pause before he says that they're a necessary sacrifice. Like, he knows that's what he has to say, and he doesn't want to say it. And I love it.
And I think part of why he doesn't want to say it is because Eli and Chloe are right there.
I agree.
If it was just him and Brody, he would say it, and Brody would mean he doesn't mean it.
Right.
But because Eli and Chloe are hearing the words come out of his mouth, there's that risk of losing some of their loyalty.
Right. I don't even think of it as far as that. Like, this is the one episode where I don't think he's as forward-thinking in those terms, right?
Or even just of demoralizing them a little bit.
Right. I think he loves them and just doesn't want to... I think he wants them to know that he does care, but he also knows what he has to get done. So I think that's what is his hesitance, right? He's like, fuck, I have to say this, but now these people are going to think I'm a shit, number one, and also it's going to hurt them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hurt people. Unless it's Young. Then I really want to hurt him. But
well, yeah. Young's pain is just delicious to Rush in all the ways.
I still don't get why the Lucian Alliance wants the ship so badly that they're willing to die for it. I still don't get it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does. And I think that's something that the story arc overall lets go too easily.
Right. This reminds me of wrestling with Shane McMahon taking over Raw.
Right.
He lost the fight with Undertaker, which meant that he wasn't able to take over Raw. But he still took over Raw. And we're all just like, what? And they're like, oh, whatever, don't worry about it. That ever happened. That wasn't a huge match at WrestleMania.
because of social media support, which Vince has ever cared about, right?
Like, right.
So it's the same deal. Like, Kiva was claiming, like, we know, don't talk about Destiny's mission. We know Destiny's mission. Like, the ship needs us. We need the ship. And then they just fucking drop it.
I'm utterly confused. I'm just going to assume that there's some reason behind it, and I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, is the implication meant to be that Kiva was the only one with that intel, or that she didn't realize how far Destiny was from other sources of backup, and so she...
Well, maybe the writers just thought it was implicit that everyone knows that Destiny's mission is super important.
But no one knows what Destiny's mission is!
No.
Except for maybe Rush and maybe Kiva.
Rush doesn't figure it out until, like, a couple episodes from now.
Exactly. And even then, I mean, he figures out how to use the ship. I don't know that he knows what the mission is, per se.
No, he thinks it's... I mean, he doesn't know for sure, but he figures out that it has to do with patterns and background radiation. And no, that's not just in fanfic. That's legit in the series.
Okay, cool. Even so, like, has to do with patterns in the CBR.
Right.
Is not a mission.
Well,
that's like saying, what's your major in college? Oh, it has to do with books.
No, I think it does have to do with the mission, because it means that if there's patterns there, that means there is this creating life force that has consciousness of some sort. Because it's associated with the obelisk planets in the series. And so I think the mission was something to do with ascension and finding those creatures, those aliens who were able to create these planets and all that stuff, know about ascension, right? Because they sent the ship out before people were able to, the ancients were able to ascend at all. So, like...
But you understand that there's never another obelisk planet in the show, right?
Yeah, I do know that part. Like, but there's enough...
Because
there's
you're
enough,
right.
There's enough canon stuff in the show to corroborate this shit, though. Because
okay. Like,
even though we never see another obelisk planet, and even though we never see another obelisk planet, we still have hints of the obelisk stuff, because you have the entire two episodes with Cain and those people whose minds are somewhere else, but their bodies weren't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and the weird, there's weird time skippy stuff. There's, yeah.
Right. There's plenty of reasons to think that the obelisk planets are still a huge part of the plot. So anyways.
Meanwhile,
Eli's watching all this shit and is like, Danik doesn't know we're watching. So he can't be bluffing. I was like, yes, he does. Because Rush said, we will, once we get visual confirmation that you did what we asked, then we'll, you know, sort of save us all. And so Eli's whole premise that they need to stop what they're doing because Danik doesn't know they're watching him is flawed. Because Rush totally told them.
Eli's flawed.
Right? So Eli, yeah, whatever. Telford and Danik argue, and then Danik gets shot by Gin.
Yeah.
I like
Yay,
to...
maybe there's more good people.
Yeah. Except for some people, I actually thought this made her a little more manipulative feeling than what she comes off of as in the next episodes that she appears. Because she's so quiet, and then shoots person. Like, she doesn't stand up for Varro. She doesn't stand up until the very last minute when it's life or death.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes me, I feel like she's a totally different character than what we see later on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a way to kind of, like, shift Danik out of power also. Maybe because they couldn't keep his actor. Who knows?
I don't know. So anyways, everything's solved just by shooting Danik and Gin taking over.
Always.
TJ is back in the medic bay, and Camille is like, yo, take it easy. By the way, your baby's dead.
Well, we have a final TJ scene talking with Cain. We learn that TJ's mother's name was Carmen, and that she names this baby Carmen, which becomes important.
Sorry,
later,
I skipped
I
over
think.
It because I'm bored by it. I'm just bored by
it's,
all the TJ
yeah,
Cain shit.
It's a weird choice
yeah.
to spend this much time. Like, it's beautifully filmed and it's beautifully acted, but it's so weird.
It would make more sense if TJ had remained out for this entire episode, and then part of the next episode, and then have her doing that hallucination stuff in a different episode. That would make more sense to me, writing-wise. And
yeah.
then add in the Simeon Telford stuff, which I think is more important.
And also gives us more tension in a first episode back from...
Right. A very
from
tense.
A season break and
yeah
so
I like everyone comes back on the ship. Scott and Greer shake hands. The Lucian Alliance have to go in a different direction than everybody else because they're still prisoners. And then Young is like, thanks, Greer and Scott, for saving our lives. And Scott goes, nope, it was Rush. And Young is surprised. And I am surprised that Young is surprised. The whole plan was, let Rush run away and he'll solve the problem. But that was literally plan A.
But yet again, here we are in this place where Young either didn't mean to be alive or didn't expect Rush to actually come through, right, or whatever.
It's bad. And then Scott kind of goes, by the way, something else. And I'm pretty sure that's when he tells Young that the baby's dead. But you don't really know because Mumford and Sons starts playing. And After the Storm is such a perfect song for this because they had a hell of a storm.
Oh, God.
Like, the storm has passed metaphorically and literally on the planet.
Yeah. So good. This song, for me, is always going to be tied to this show. And it is one of my favorite songs in the world.
They are real good. This album is amazing. I love this album.
It sets the tone in the same way that the music used in the first season set the tone.
It does. You know, like, they're out of luck is one of the lyrics. Night has always pushed up day, but I'm not going to rot. Like, it's very true to SGU.
And we see so many things without being told them, right? We are shown many things. We see the look on Kiva's face as she sees Varro come back and knows that she's not in charge anymore. We see Rush attempt to sleep.
You mean Gin?
Sorry, not Kiva. Gin.
Yeah.
Gin.
Yeah. Yeah. Rush. Oh my God. He's exhausted. Like, the command must have weighed so heavily on him. And I think I really feel that he is worried about how he gambled with people's lives. And I don't think it came to as easily to him as people think that it did. Like, I think that's what that short little scene of him collapsing to the bed, trying to sleep, and then being like, nope, can't handle this. Can't be with my thoughts.
Well, and I think that's Rush all over, is knowing that he did the right thing and still feeling guilt over it.
Right. I think he's worried
knowing
about
that they're through the storm, but knowing that there's still so much work to do that he can't turn his mind off.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then Chloe's staring at her leg while Matt sleeps. I thought it was a really beautiful scene.
Yeah.
And very surreal feeling at the same time. And the lyrics that play while she's doing that is, death is so full and man is so small. And I just, it really fits her, right? Because her life has been death up until this point. Like, she's thought Matt has died before. She watched her dad die. She was tortured by the Nakai. Like, how is she supposed to handle all of this? Plus this weird thing that her leg is healing. It just feels, it feels right.
Yeah, the other line in the Chloe scene is, I guess I'll just go home or God knows where.
Yeah, because she did. And it's established last season that home doesn't feel like home to her anymore. But the ship isn't home to her either. So God knows where. It's just beautiful. It really makes sense for her, having her with those lyrics. Young is drinking and crying.
And we did earlier see Young reach out to TJ as well.
Yeah.
Like, in the med bay. So there's this two-sided angle where we know he went to her.
Yeah, and she was like,
but he's
don't.
Not asleep at her bedside crying, right? Like, he's alone in the darkness crying.
Because she basically told him to go away, right? She didn't look at him. To me, that scene where she, like, turns her head away and starts weeping was her telling him to go away. So that's why he's alone drinking.
God.
Are you ready for my Brody feels? Are you ready? Are you sure you're ready? So Brody and Volker talk. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, they do. No, the music is over and Brody and Volker talk.
And Volker is completely unaffected by everything because he spent most of this crisis in relative safety. And Brody is just silent. Silent as the grave. And what I think is that he's actually very, very upset about what happened because he knows he's just as complicit as Rush is. I think he's having the same exact thoughts as Rush is having. Like, I did what needed to be done, but I feel like shit for it, and I hate it. And I think that this is the sign that he's going to start breaking from Rush and trying to go back to Earth during that time where, you know, they have the generations on the planet. But the weird thing to me is, remember last season he said, I always knew I was going to die in space. But this tested him to such a level. Like, what he had to do with the welding of the door and Telford, like, you know, almost killing Telford knowing Rush was in him. I think it tested him to a point that he's lost his, I'm not going to say break from Rush necessarily as a person, but I think he's lost his drive to be there as much as Rush has his drive to be there. And I think that's why he makes the decision he does in the middle of the series.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think a part of why Brody has been so loyal to Rush is that I think there's been something aspirational there.
Right.
He wants to be as certain as Rush is. He mm-hmm. wants to be able to make those decisions, and he understands, maybe even on a bigger level, like the ship needs a backup Rush.
And so far he has.
And he has. He has made himself fight through this and been playing the what would Rush do game in his head.
Right.
And done the right things, right?
Right.
The right from a Rush perspective.
Right. Well, I don't think it's totally a Rush thing. Like, I think he agrees with Rush.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think what he's realizing as he's, you know, in this place looking at whatever readout it is that he's getting and trying to process the past and the present, and is that, like, all that guilt and that pathos that we know that Rush carries with him, right? That we saw as Rush collapses after what must be a 48-hour day.
Right.
And then gets back up.
Right. Well, it's telling that Brody's still awake and doing stuff too.
Yeah. And I don't think that Brody wants to deal with that. I think he's realizing that he's not prepared for everything, the aftermath of what comes with making the right decisions, even when you know they're the right decision.
And I think, yeah, no, absolutely. I also think that, like, that long pause and then he goes, okay, everything's safe. I think there's two ways to read that. It's either, like, he's so just exhausted that he doesn't know if he can handle another crisis, or he's just relieved that he doesn't have to do it again.
Why not both?
Why not both? And Volker is just dumb. But this final scene, this mirror of Brody and Rush just separately trying to deal with their feelings, just supports, you know, my little Brush fantasy.
Yeah, it's...
So, Jesus Christ. It's... How is such a minor character that no one cares about, like, so important to me in this story? He's amazing. It's so good. His story is more compelling than half of the other actors who have twice as much screen time.
Yep. And he is consistent within himself, and he tells his own story, and he advocates for his character, even when he's not given lines. He acts it, right?
Right.
Even when it's, you know, scene 12, enter Rush and some scientists. Brody's there, and Brody's being Brody, whether he speaks or not.
Yeah. No, he is. He has micro expressions, or not even just micro expressions, just the way he reacts to things. Like, I've seen him roll his eyes at people, or, like, consciously not look at Young or something. Like, it's so good. It's so good. Okay, I'll shut up about Brody.
His eyes are tracking the right people at the right times and being engaged.
Right.
And even, so that scene.
And working at the same time.
That scene on paper
is,
Volker says some stuff about the new planet, and then Brody says, yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Right? It's this release moment. But the way it is presented is about who Adam Brody's character is.
Right.
And what he's doing and what he's been through.
We found Adam Brody's breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember,
and either the director's real good or the actor's real good.
Maybe both. But you have to remember, like, the last 20 episodes I've been going, Adam Brody is unflappable. Unflappable. Like, remember on Earth, he had no idea if Brush is actually doing that plan or not. He just assumed it and, like, just stuck with it.
Yeah.
No hesitation whatsoever.
He's been through a whole sequence where he believed in Rush and believed that they would be on the same page in terms of decisions.
And they were. They still were. And
They still were. They still are. But he's finally reached a point, as you said, where he's not okay with the consequences.
Right.
Even though there weren't necessarily consequences outside of the emotional ones. Like,
right. No, it's the same thing with Greer, right? Like, Greer, remember in after the Tick episode, human, I think. No, it's not human. I can't remember. But the one it's with the memories, human. Like he had, yeah, human's that awful episode. he had to deal.
Really good one.
Is it? Oh, human's the one where Rush is in.
Yeah, human's the one about Gloria. Yeah.
God, which one's the Tick episode called? I can't remember. But anyways, he has to deal with the consequences of things that he didn't really do, you know, and it fucks with him. I just, and you want to be like Greer, none of that ever happened. Or if it did, it wasn't your fault. And cause I think it was like a two-parter thing, right?
There's the Tick episode with the hallucinations and also time. Greer feels a lot of that.
Oh, that's right. It was time when he really felt it. I remember that.
Yeah, he sees himself fail these people in multiple different iterations, and none of them are him.
Right? None of them are him, but
he still feels it.
Exactly. So, like, oh, I would watch a show that was Brody, Greer, and Rush.
Yeah.
Just the three of them for the rest of my life. I love them so much. So, anyways, / Brody love fest over.
And into our... Yeah, into our last sequence here, and TJ extricates herself from the med bay, and there's this very weird, she's walking through the halls of Destiny, and the halls are, they're lit, and they're warm, and there are people in them, and no
like,
one's
living
in danger.
As if nothing happened. That's the weird part. They're all just like, ah, we're just gonna pretend the last 4 days didn't happen, reading books, eating food, chilling out, talking.
What else are you gonna do, though?
That's true.
Like... You can't let yourself continue to live in terror when you're out of that situation.
I know, but I still think I would be a little bit, like, more subdued for a little bit.
Well, and I think TJ is evidence of that, right? Because she's in this place that maybe one or two people are interacting with each other. There are definitely not large groups. There's not laughter.
Right, that's true.
Or energy, really. It's just people existing near one another.
Yeah.
And TJ is still alone.
You're right.
She walks by people. No one acknowledges her. She acknowledges no one.
Right.
Like, this atmosphere is giving her no comfort for what is going on inside of
her.
But
I don't think she wants anyone to acknowledge her.
Oh, no.
So, that's good. Elena Huffman, she's so good, too. Like, you know, I'm always talking about Luis Ferreira and how good he is. He can just make you feel shits with a single look. And so can Elena Huffman. She's real good. Real good.
Yeah.
Anyways, I wrote my last note for this was, ugh, I love this show.
It's real good. I remember crying a lot the first time I watched this, partially because Mumford & Sons is in that genre of music. One, I'd never heard the song before at the time.
Yeah.
But they're in that genre of music that sometimes just gives me tingles or makes me weep for no reason.
Their concert at Red Rocks was probably the best concert I've ever been to, solely because of just like the level of pathos they are able to extract from you.
Yeah, they're opening for U2 at like just the first three shows of the U2 tour this next year, and I'm like, Jesus, to be at one of those shows.
I don't know,
that
I'm not
size
a big...
of an arena for them.
Well, their third album is not great, unfortunately, but their first two are amazing.
Okay.
But they just went in a direction I didn't like. Fair play to them, but I don't like it, so whatever.
So, closing thoughts.
I think I pretty much said them throughout the whole episode. I don't think the TJ stuff should have happened this episode. I thought the Chloe stuff was a little bit strained. I felt that there was some hiccups with the Danik-Kiva switch, but overall, still a really strong episode. Really strong.
Yeah. I mean, definitely puts us in a sense of who these people are and what they're capable of.
And it solves the crisis nicely while introducing new conflicts, except they dropped all the conflicts. Like, the Lucian Alliance being there should have been, like, I don't know, the McKeon Voyager or the different, like, political groups in Battlestar Galactica. Like, it should have had that long-lasting effect, but instead the Lucian Alliance gets, like, killed off one by one pretty quickly. And then it's just back to the normal crew, and that pisses me off.
Yeah.
But it really sets it up nicely, like, that's gonna happen.
Yeah. You're left believing this, like, okay, we're going to have this other faction.
Right.
But now they're still alone in space. They have to support each other. And...
Right. Like, Young and Rush are going to, like, unite with each other with some hiccups, obviously, against the Lucians. And, like, it just... Beautiful setup. I don't like how they hit the ball out of the park. Yeah.
So where can they find us on the internet, Boom?
It is sgupodcast.tumblr.com. I am at boomslovingthealien.tumblr.com or Twitter, Boom Complains. And where are you? Where are you, Cetra?
I am Cetra Lynn, so Cetralynn, on just about every social media platform.
Yep.
That's Tumblr, that's Twitter, and yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just a final thing. By the time that you guys get this episode, my newest book will be out. It is called The Death of Israel Leventhal. So if you are interested in grave-digging boyfriends who have a dynamic that is somewhat similar to Arthur and Eames from Inception, then you should totally check that out.
I've read bits. It's really cool.
Thank you. Anyways, bye.
Goodbye.